Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
Today, I'm joined by Dr. Craig Joseph, the Chief Medical Officer from Nordic Consulting Partners on News You Can Use. Today's episode is sponsored by Atlantic.net, the award-winning cloud hosting company trusted with securing critical data for over 25 years. Their industry-leading HIPAA-compliant cloud hosting solutions are backed by a fully audited 100% service level agreement and customer satisfaction guarantee. Get started today with your free trial at Atlantic.net. Craig, thanks for joining me today.
I'm excited to be here.
So we're just off our Andes visit, and I guess both of us excited to see each other in person. It's funny, you look exactly like you do on the TV screen.
And you actually look a lot better in person, I'm going to say. In real life, I thought you were a little pale and shorter.
That doesn't sound better, but just to be clear.
I don't, then the opposite of what I just said. It was exciting under any circumstances to see you.
I feel like pretty much anything could have happened on that trip, but it was just nice to have some real human contact with a range of folks and many old friends. So it was a great time. So this month, talking about a range of things going on, I thought we'd kick off talking about ransomware. It feels to me that not only do we continue to see ransomware attacks everywhere, but increasingly targeted on healthcare. What are you seeing?
Well, I think it's the same thing. Every day, hospitals across the country, really the world as well, and are being attacked. And, you know, that's where the money is. Hospitals are much more likely to pay a ransom if their data are encrypted. They have to, because they need to take care of patients. And so it's also a place where it's difficult, I think, more so than in a lot of big corporations, to secure their data. They have a lot of people who need access to things like the electronic health record, and to educate all of those folks about proper ways of securing their password, of not falling for phishing attacks, of those things, is more difficult, I think, than at a bank or an insurance company. So they're prime targets.
You know, and the interesting thing about that is that if that's the case, is there any scope to prevent or challenge this? I mean, if you think about this, you know, you've got this massive surface area of attack that is open. You provide critical services. Your scope to sort of prevent, and, you know, as I've been heard to say, we humans are the weakest link in this. How do we protect? Is there some method or means that we can start to help folks prevent these attacks from occurring?
I think it's there's certainly no one way. As someone, a security expert once told me, if you really want to be 100% sure that no one's going to attack your computer, don't plug it in, right?
I just have to stop you right there. Even that is insufficient. I saw a paper that showed for an air-gapped computer, it was possible to actually hack it using EM technology. An extraordinary...
Well, no. I'm saying don't plug it into a power source, Nick.
Oh, I see. So completely unpowered. I'm sure somebody's going to come up with something.
So the point being well taken, that there's nothing you can... If someone who's sophisticated really wants to get in, they're going to. And I think it's just like preventing or minimizing your risk of burglary at your house. If someone really wants to get into your house, they're going to get into your house. If they're a professional and they know what they're doing. What you're trying to do is make it difficult and put up as many barriers as you can so that someone who's just looking for trouble can go to the next place. And so it's a combination of certainly ongoing training and education for your staff, ongoing attempts to stay one step ahead with the technology of when holes are made public to make sure that you're patching them and that you're always up to date with the latest software. Sometimes being up to date with the latest software is bad, but that's the exception, not the rule. And I think also there are policy things that we've seen. A lot of this malware comes from Russia, or at least that's what the United States officials have said. And so trying to make it more appealing for officials of certain countries to crack down on either, you know, cyber espionage or cyber stalking is going to be helpful. But not one thing is ever going to fix this problem. We have to make it so that it becomes less lucrative, and also make it more difficult, right? So a lot of times these are not very sophisticated actors that are able to carry out very lucrative encrypting of people's data. So making it more difficult will be helpful. But yeah, I don't think if I had the one solution, I wouldn't be talking to you. I would be managing the building of my island state.
Yes, exactly. I think we heard at AMDIS from one of the presenters that if the one thing that you learn from all of this is that it's just going to be harder to access systems because we have to put in these two-factor authentication, you know, constant sort of reminders to sort of preclude that. And I think what we need to see is some more technology being applied, some automation perhaps to sort of seek rather than trying to prevent the attacks. But you're exactly right. This is a huge challenge, and it's just this ripe platform that is open for opportunity, which leads me to our next area, the American Rescue Plan Funding Act that just came out, offered a $80 million, I believe was the number, essentially designed to promote digital collection data, bolster all of the underrepresented public health information technology, which on its own, you go, well, that's pretty cool. $80 million. The government's taking public health and IT seriously. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, public health has always been the neglected stepchild of the healthcare system in the United States, at least, probably in a lot of places, but certainly in the United States. That's never where the sexy things happened and the well-reimbursed things happened. And that was fine until it wasn't. And last couple of years, we've seen what happens when your public health system is lackluster. And so we've certainly paid the price of not really having our eyes on what was going on with respect to COVID and to other upcoming threats. And so certainly $80 million is a great step in the right direction of trying to encourage all the individual local, state, and the CDC to share data and to kind of be more cognizant of what's going on. That said, I think that we had talked before the show about how much was in that entire grant, which was more than $80 million. What was that number again?
$350 billion.
Yeah. So the total was $350 billion, of which $80 million was for public health and IT. And percentage-wise, I think that's a small percentage.
I think that's the disappointing thing. So yes, it's great. Yes, we need to focus on public health. Well, actually, no, not yes. We must focus on public health. It is probably the most important thing. We spend gargantuan amounts on healthcare, and we could spend much less if we actually did a really good job in public health and did prevention and created equitable access. And yet, out of that $350 billion, it was 0.02%. of the total. That for me is just very troubling. We really have to focus and spend the resources. You can't do this without it. Great, we've put in $80 million, but is that really going to make some differences? Perhaps, but not significant and certainly not persistent. So hopefully we're going to see more of that. Meantime, I think there's been some focus on addresses and data cleanup, which you were looking at, right?
Well, I'm proud to say it. I'm going to say it out loud. I'm a nerd, And I'm sometimes fascinated by very, very technical issues that one would think would not be that big. And so what you're referencing is that the Office of the National Coordinator for Healthcare IT in the United States, part of HHS, is leading an initiative to standardize patients' addresses here in the United States. And I think we've all seen that the U.S. Postal Service has done this whenever you, well, not all the time, but often enough when I'm entering my address, when I'm ordering something online or somehow giving someone my address, I might type in my street address. And about half the time I get a little pop-up and it says, you typed this, did you mean that? And usually what it's correcting is I typed the word street out and it's saying, no, it's really capital S, capital T. Isn't that what you mean? And I'm like, sure.
I just have to say, how come it's only some of the time? Because I get it all of the time.
Well, I'm clearly better at entering my demographic information than you are.
You obviously have caps lock on your keyboard, because that's the other thing. It capitalizes everything. But yes, you're right. It always pops up.
So the other problem potentially is that I don't go to quality websites like you do. Be that as it may, it seems like the U.S. Postal Service has figured this out, right? They have standard abbreviations, they capitalize everything, and that makes their lives much easier when they have automated technology that are trying to read these addresses off of the envelopes and get them to where they need to go. And if it can be in a standard format, it's much better. We're having the same problem in healthcare. Apparently, for reasons I don't understand, we're not able to just leverage the rules and technology that the U.S. Postal Service has already developed. And we're trying to develop them again in terms of collecting patient information. And the reason this is important is not to be able to send out collection notices and bills, although I'm sure that's a part. The main problem is in identifying patients. So a patient walks into the emergency department and gives their information, trying to see, do we have this patient already in our database? Or one hospital's electronic health record is trying to get information from another hospital's electronic health record and say, hey, we have this patient in our hospital. Do you have this patient's information as well so that we can get their test data and their medical history and such? And making sure that those are the same patients, we're comparing many things, their name, their date of birth. And one of the things that we're comparing is their street address. And if those are different, then the computer has a bit more difficult time in making sure that this is the right person that we're trying to connect to. And it was fairly astounding to me that this is a problem in this day and age, that we can't just say, just like when when we type in our address and it's not the way the USPS wants it, why can't we just take those same rules and apply them to the clerk that's entering the information when the patient's registering for their office visit and say, oh, I think you meant ST, not street. Under any circumstance, it's a fascinating, I think it was like 75 or 80 pages of recommendations to begin the conversation about standardizing patient addresses. So yeah, that's what excites me, and I'm proud of that fact.
For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Craig Joseph, the Chief Medical Officer for Nordic Consulting Partners. We're on our monthly News You Can Use. Just a reminder on today's sponsor, and get started with your free trial at atlantic.net, the simple solution for HIPAA-compliance cloud hosting needs. We were just talking about the HHS, or was it ONC, I forget. I think it was ONC, address verification system. As you rightly pointed out, that just shows up everywhere. It doesn't matter what I order, and they can deliver packages. And there is barely a time that I don't have it show up. Why we can't have that, why we have a 70 plus page document to recreate the wheel seems extraordinary. There has to be a better way of innovating in healthcare and spending the $80 million that the government has generously provided from a digital health enablement from the American Rescue Plan funding package. So other things going on. Doximity went or has released its IPO paperwork, a cool $4 billion valuation. We saw a little bit from those folks at the recent conference. Any thoughts? I mean, my experience with Doximity, the quiet, sort of successful, long time in the making, but, you know, over 300,000 active physician participants, I think there was some accelerant to them with COVID-19 and telehealth. They really sort of provided an adjunct service that was quite capable for physicians with some clever features. And now they're actually going public. That's quite the valuation.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I've been a Doximity user. I think many non-physicians have probably never heard of Doximity. It's a company that I think they started off trying to be something like Facebook or LinkedIn for physicians. And so only not licensed, but physicians who are registered with the AMA were allowed to get in. Again, not saying that you have to be an AMA member, but you can't just say you're a doctor, that you had to prove that you were who you said you were. And then you got access. And they have they start off with just a lot of little tools. They had a cute little thing, which they still use, which a lot of doctors still use. So when you call someone from your cell phone, a patient, you can call through Doximity and it will spoof the phone number to your, so what it looks like you're calling from the office, so that patients don't have your personal cell phone, which a lot of physicians think is a good idea. So they have little tools like that. And they have a great place for storing your CME. And a lot of physicians have just kind of signed up and use a tool here and there. And lo and behold, a significant chunk of U.S. physicians have given their information to Doximity. And Doximity, I think, has used that information for good, not for evil. They've sold it to pharma companies. And you say, well, is that good or is that evil? I think it's reality, and we're certainly not inundated with ads, but people do know how to get a hold of us. Recruiters, so hospitals and doctors' offices who are looking for physicians, leverage that a lot more than LinkedIn. And as you said, they introduced an incredible tool for telehealth that physicians just adopted like crazy. And the problem was that the security through it wasn't as great at the beginning when they first introduced it. And a lot of hospitals who are very sensitive to cybersecurity, as we mentioned in the first part of the show, were not none too happy. But now they've updated that. And so it's very easy to get on a call with a doctor, a video visit. Doesn't have all the bells and whistles, but it works, and it works
right.
Great.
It's an instant access. You know, doesn't matter what the patient is in. The teleconsult can be a telephone call, but also a video call for those folks that are equipped, and it's sort of one touch. You know, and they created a business model out of that was, it's free to get in, but there were some additional options that people have signed up, and they're actually creating revenue. So, you know, fascinating. And the feature you mentioned or didn't mention that I think is kind of interesting is where your colleagues that you're connected with have shown up, not so much in the news, which is what LinkedIn does, but actually in papers. So I see papers that folks have published or referenced or authors in that I find interesting to sort of keep up with, you know, some of my colleagues and my specialty. So, you know, for me, certainly useful features, but I think a great story. It'd be interesting to watch and see where that goes. As we talk about public companies, I think that brings up Zus Health. Have you heard of them?
I have heard of them. I think they want to be pronounced as Zeus Health. But it's
spelled Z-U-S or Z, as you guys say.
Right? It is spelled Z, as we might say outside of the United States, U-S. But I think they wanted it to be called Zeus, like the Greek god Zeus. And
there's
supposed to be an E in there. Yeah, I'm not a spelling expert. It's supposed to be an E. And, you know, they created the company and started doing what companies do. And then someone tapped them on the shoulder and said, excuse me, we're Zeus Health. We've been Zeus Health. So we've got
that.
We've got that kind of copyrighted or trademarked or whatever it is that one does. So,
so
now they're and you're making fun of them, and that's fine. I think that's appropriate, and they deserve it. But they're now
given who's in charge. I think it's fair game, right? Because he's certainly known for his comedic behavior, for
yeah,
sure, right?
So Jonathan Bush is the CEO, and he is in healthcare circles well known for Athena Health, which is a very successful electronic health record company focused really on smaller offices. in the United States and potentially elsewhere. And so he has left that company a while ago, and this is another endeavor. And he certainly understands the healthcare industry in the U.S. He is, his last name is Bush. He's related to the presidents. So he has some good family connections as well. And he seems to be successful at things that he's trying to be successful at. And so we'll see what this company does. They're trying to be a marketplace for healthcare information. What does that mean? We'll find out. I think the idea is not that they store data, but that there's a centralized place for individual applications that are being created to work together in a kind of a centralized marketplace.
I've just got to say, you know, all credit to somebody to raise, I believe, $34 million. And I can't quite tell exactly what it is that they do. So I that may just be my inadequacies, but I didn't hear too much detail. Marketplace, but, you know, there's clearly something there. There's a team, you know, investors have said there's some potential. I think as we look at the digital health marketplace, you know, the explosion of activity and lots of people that we talked about in the past that, you know, potentially going to fall off. There's this, you know, failure, the black swan discussion from the last time. Interesting to see, I think exciting potentially, because as I read the materials and what's available publicly, allow people to focus on the patients and not going after and accessing the data. That's certainly admirable, you know, solves a lot of problems. So from my perspective, you know, looking forward to seeing it. Let's hope they can do it and do it quickly, because we definitely need it. You know, good news, we had $80 million in HHS that was invested in that. So that's over $100 million at this point invested in focusing on digital health, which I see as the big enabler. I mean, this is the augmentation of the future of healthcare. It's not replacing things, but I think it has to make things better, more equitable access, wider spread access. So I think all round good news. Unfortunately, as we do every month, we've run out of time. We would like to thank our sponsor today, Atlantic.net. Keeping your focus on the patient is essential, and having the wrong cloud service plan can be costly. Start your free trial of HIPAA-compliant cloud hosting today at Atlantic.net. And of course, just remains for me to thank Craig for joining me, as he does each and every month, talking about the latest and greatest news. Always a pleasure to see you. It was a great pleasure to see you in person, but always good to catch up and focus on what's been going on. Craig, thanks for joining me today.
As always, a pleasure on my side too. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.